Although it's another international break, Tribe Supper, they seem to come round more than the games at this stage of the season. Borough go into the break on the back of 9 matches without a win. But there was a bit more of a positive feeling after the draw at QPR on Saturday. I wrote earlier today, Vic, that going into the international breaks this season, Jonathan Woodgate had just about every emotion, really. There was the kind of really upbeat feeling after Bristol City, one of the best performances of the season. The direct opposite at Birmingham, which went in the last break. And then I would imagine after QPR, he's probably feeling somewhere in between.
I think there's a lot of positives from the QPR game. And it's been nice that they scored goals, because in recent weeks we've said that there's been positives in terms of the shape, the solidity, the fact that they're creating their chances. But, you know, they just couldn't score. They couldn't buy a goal, and that's been the fundamental problem. It's hard to put a positive gloss on a run of 9 without a win. But I do think performances have improved in recent weeks. I think the shape suits them. I think the players have bedded into it. They are creating chances. And another positive is that 3 first-teamers came back. So when we resume action, presumably they're back in the mix. They'll have had a couple of weeks in training, be a bit sharper. And then Borough really are going to have to step up a gear. The next couple of games, absolutely crucial. Barnsley, you're looking at that, and it's a must-win match.
Phil, me and Vic were talking about this in the office on Monday. Hull and Barnsley, is it, do Borough need 6 points? Is 4 a fair return, or do Borough need 6, given that away games against Leeds, Forest, Charlton, Swansea all follow?
I think they do need 6. I think they certainly need 4 plus 2 outstanding performances. If you're going to have 4 points, you know, you'd take a scratchy 6, wouldn't you, over an impressive 4, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because it's getting the point now where Borough need to put points on the board. You can't be in a situation where you get more than a win away from safety, because this division is brutal. We've all said it. And you get a good result on one weekend, and the following Tuesday or the next Saturday you slip up, and suddenly you just can't get out of that sticky treacle that you find yourself in. So I think the good news is that, touching on what Vic said, I looked at the team on Saturday as they were playing at Loftus Road, and they looked more like the Borough we used to remember when they looked big and strong under Tony Pulis. I've referred to the match a few times, the Leeds game last season away, when Borough had the all-red kit on like they did at Loftus Road. And they looked physically imposing, they looked strong, they looked dominant. Now, I wouldn't go overboard about Saturday's performance, but you looked across the back and you've got some big, big lads there, particularly with George Fenn being back as well, you know, the big big lads in the big red, in the red kit. They look as though you can dominate a pitch again. And, you know, McNair being in midfield is a huge plus. I think, you know, if there's a situation where Borough lose another centre-back in the next few weeks, he's going to have to look at a plan B, because you can't keep putting McNair there. Although, ironically, the defence has been really good when he was in the defence. So, yeah, it is a time now to start putting points on the board. You know, the performances have improved. There's no two ways about it. But Borough haven't really picked up the points. And whether you play well or badly, that's what it comes down to. You know, there were moments against Derby where I thought when Borough went down to 10 men and they reorganised, I thought they looked as though they might pull off a shock result, because they did well with 10 men for the best part of an hour. And there's been other moments where they've looked good. But, you know, we are waiting for that, you know, the good results and the good performance on the same day, aren't we?
The point, although it wasn't a win, it was just a draw, but not losing at QPR, Vic, felt important just for the whole mood surrounding the club. It'd been a long, long 2 weeks with another defeat, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and goals. I mean, it'd been 4 games without a goal, so it was really important to do that. The weight of the world was on Britt Sombalonga's shoulders. It was really important that he scored and put in a good performance. I think it was important that the shape took another step forward and people looked more comfortable in it. Ideally, you'd win. I mean, there's no getting away from that. Ideally, you'd win. But it was a performance that you could salvage some positives on from. And going into the international break, that was massive. I don't think we could afford to stew through 2 weeks again like we did after Birmingham.
This might sound a daft, ridiculous question, but this whole the league table is lying thing, because Woodgate said it and then Warburton said it before and after Saturday's game. Do you agree? And if so, Where do you think, position-wise, would be a fair reflection of Borough's performances so far this season?
I don't know where Woody was coming from when he said it, and he may have been able to phrase it in a slightly better way. He is right, Borough haven't really had the rub of the green, but, you know, we are third of the way through the season now. Frankly, the league table is what it is, as to paraphrase Tony Mowbray. Borough are where they are for a reason. They've conceded too many soft goals and they haven't scored enough goals. And performances here and there have been positive, but Borough haven't really been playing teams off the park and getting beaten. So I understand where Woody's coming from. I genuinely do. I think Borough have been arguably better than the bottom three side. They have, apart from Sheffield Wednesday and Birmingham, I can't think of too many occasions where they've been really, really desperate. And when they've had some good moments, there have been good moments. But you know, you're not sitting here saying, you know, Borough should have another 10 points, shall we? I don't think that's realistic. Maybe it's the Brentford game you think about. I mean, the only downside, you know, about the QPR match, just briefly going back to it, was the fact that they got back to conceding those daft goals. You know, after doing so much good work to solidify themselves at the back and be hard to break down and to keep out those soft goals, that's been their undoing, as much as bad refereeing and bad finishing has just been those, you know, really, you know, the Sheffield Wednesday game, the defending was atrocious, there's no two ways. So they are where they are, and I think he said it now, and that's fine. He said it, and
it is the type of statement that is held against.
If you're in a losing run, no matter what you say, it's just a weapon to beat you with. I understand where he's coming from, and sometimes, the table doesn't lie, but it doesn't necessarily give a true reflection of the last couple of performances, and I think that's what he was alluding to, that the team had been more solid and fit. But what it comes down to at the end of the day is sticking the ball in the net. Britta Sombalong has missed sitters. Ashley Fletcher contrived to miss from 3 foot out. And if either of those go in, then yes, the table would look healthier. And I think professional athletes, that's how they think. They'll be thinking, we're performing well. Yeah, we're not getting the results, but we're performing well. And that's part of the psychological makeup of an athlete.
It does remind me a little bit of the, as I think I've said this before, of the Tony Mowbray season before he got sacked, in that Borough weren't playing that badly under Tony, but they just couldn't keep the ball out of the net. That was the main problem for him, is that they just conceded soft goals. Then, of course, there was the Barnsley match, which did for him, on the back of the end of the previous season where Borough had finished poorly, hadn't they? So, but sometimes you get a team in the bottom three and you just think they've been desperate, they've been dire, it's no surprise that they're down there. That hasn't been the case with Middlesbrough. I think the players are clearly playing for Jonathan Woodgate. You could question one or two individuals at times and say, you know, could they do more? I think there's times when we saw on Saturday what Britt can do when he puts his mind to it. He just looked a different player, didn't he? He was chasing lost causes, he looked dangerous with the ball at his feet, he was finding the gaps. His finish for the second goal was, to use a coin of phrase, sublime, if I may.
It was that little dink
over the advancing keeper. That is instinctual finishing.
The point has been made, hasn't it, with Britt, on numerous occasions, that's where he comes into his own, when there's no time to kind of consider, to think, when it just comes to him like that, instinctive finishing. And both goals were like that.
Well, the one that shot across the face of goal, it was a long ball.
And took it down.
A long 60-yard raking ball from the back, brought it down, cut inside, and had a shot. And we haven't seen that for him for a long time. You know, that was we've been crying out for that. And it just clearly, the goal must, getting a goal in the first 5 minutes, would have, all that weight would have slipped off his shoulders. The self-belief comes flooding back. He fancied the game, he was up for it, and suddenly a different player emerges.
He's got 6 now. Eric Paylor in his column this week was saying if Hassan Belonga gets to 15 again, and you get 10 from Fletcher, which is a big ask given that he hasn't scored since the opening day of the season. But, I mean, 6 from now, you'd be looking at, you know, Hassan Belonga, I think it's fair to hope for 10 by Christmas. Would it be realistic to ask for more than 15?
If the team continues to create good chances, then I think it probably is realistic to ask for it. He got, what was it last year, 14, 15?
I think it was 15, because he matched his best
in tally, a team that was designed to contain and squeeze space and didn't really create a lot of chances.
A team that was designed not to get the best out of Britain.
Exactly, yeah. And he was playing in a role that was very uncomfortable for him, and he got 15. So why wouldn't you expect to get more from a team that's designed to create chances? And a team which ostensibly plays the ball how he likes it, which is, you know, 2 feet in front of him on the edge of the box.
What did we make of Fletcher then? Because this, after the way he ended last year, and you were only talking about his goal, but it was 6-13 or 6-14 at the back end of last season. Looked sharp in pre-season, got off the mark at Luton, and probably all fair to assume that he was going to kick on, but it just hasn't quite happened for him, has it?
No, we were talking about this earlier, weren't we? I mean, I do, to repeat the point, and maybe when we discussed it, I do think he looked more suited to that 4-3-3, coming in off the wide areas. So he's playing as a forward, but not as a centre-forward. And he did get some chances, and he was unlucky against Brentford, you know, to get a perfectly good goal or two chalked off. I mean, you look at his career stats. I know Vic made the point about those that purple patch at the end of last season, and fair play to him for coming after what had been a difficult time at Borough, and obviously his loan moves as well. He's never going to be, I don't think his stats suggest he'll ever be prolific. I wouldn't say he was a natural finisher in the way that, you know, we talked about Britt there, that when he's on, he's really on. I don't know if the current formation seems to suit him because he's playing behind Britt. I mean, if you're asking me now how many goals Ashley Fletcher potentially get between now and the end of the season, I can't see how he's going to get anywhere near double figures if you look at his ratio so far. And if Borough stick with that formation, which I think they probably will, because it seems to suit most of the players, if not all of them, unlike 4-3-3, which didn't really seem to suit many of the players at all. So, you know, I forget who made the point earlier this week, it might have been you, Dom. The goals have to come from midfield as well. That is the ultimately, you need more from McNair. They need, you know, Johnny Howson's obviously playing at right wing back. He's capable of scoring goals in the Championship. We know he is. Lewis Wing's not quite hit the heights, but he's capable of scoring goals as well, isn't he? So,
well, McNair's the only other player, as well as Britt, who's scored more than a single goal in the league so far. And when you consider now that it's middle of November and you're 16 games into the season, you need more than that. So you need more players chipping in. Because I think that's probably, you know, there's been a lot of talk about Sam Belonga and these missed chances. But the pressure is very much on him when he goes into games and he knows, I know say that Borough are creating chances, but he's not getting teed up with four or five absolute clear cut chances every game. And he knows that if he misses, the chances of others bailing him out are slim to none, really.
I mean, you say no one's scored, but everyone's been queuing up to hit the woodwork, and that's one of the problems, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean,
it's a lack of accuracy. Bernie said last week it's composure when you get in that area, and as a professional footballer, you've got to hit the target, especially from 10 yards out.
And I think that would be the thing is, it's not as if Britt doesn't score goals, has never scored goals. That's been the strange thing about it. We're not talking about somebody who, maybe it's a David Nugent, who gets you 9 or 10 a season on a good season. You know, Britt's career average, certainly over the last few years, has been 1 every 2, give or take. So he can score goals. We're not talking about somebody who's never done it prolifically. He does score goals. You know, Patrick Bamford had his moments at Borough, didn't he? And he would go on a purple patch. You know, he's had a lot of stick down at Leeds because he can't seem to put it in the net. So it's not just Borough. It's a tough art.
It's strange with Britt, isn't it? That when you look at his ratio for Borough and how many goals he's scored, we talked there about him succeeding in a team where he really shouldn't have last season. So on goals alone, you look at Britt and you think he's done what Borough bought him to do. But then there is that niggling feeling that Borough haven't got, that we haven't seen the best of him.
In this team
or just at Borough in general?
I don't think it helped the situation last season that you had a manager who called him out every week. You know, because the previous season when Pulis had come in, obviously it was Monk signing, allegedly. He was the club's record signing. Monk played him just about every week and his goal record was good under Gary Monk. I think he got to double figures by November or something like that.
Yeah.
Obviously in a team that had other attacking players like your Braithwaites and Downings as well in it. When Pulis came in, he made his mind up he didn't fancy Britt. That was pretty obvious. Rudy Gestede was the first choice striker for a while, and then Bamford got his nose in front when Gestede was injured. when the, you know, and I think there was times when Britt was playing left-hand side, wasn't he? You know, at times. And so he
was it Fulham away? Yeah, QPR away? It was QPR away, yeah. Wasn't it, when he played Britt left and Jingle up front?
So you had a situation he had a situation where he was playing for a manager who clearly didn't fancy him, and that must mess with your mind a little bit when you know, all players are confidence players, but particularly strikers. You know, he's 1 minute he's not in the team, then he's in the team but he's out of position, then he's in the team and he misses a chance and the manager hauls him over the coals for it, and then he scores a couple of goals but he's told he should have scored two more in the same press conference. You know, we've all seen it. And, you know, so suddenly under Woody, he's got a manager who genuinely believes in him again.
But maybe he needs the rocket, though. I mean, because we say that the team under Pulis wasn't set up for him. He was asked to do a job he wasn't designed for in terms of holding it up as the lone front man. Yet his strike rate was better.
In a better team, I would say.
Maybe getting a tongue lashing on a regular basis helped motivate him, whereas saying that no matter what, you're my main man, maybe not, maybe he needs to be.
Well, I think the difference is this season particularly is he's got nobody behind him pushing him, whereas in the past he had Bamford, Gisted, Hugel, there have been other options for the manager, and the Braithwaite even. I think this season he's probably been a little bit comfortable. I get that point, certainly, that he knows, apart from being allegedly rested for the first half against Huddersfield, he's started every match this season, I think, hasn't he? So he is in the comfort zone in that respect. He's got nobody behind him pushing him.
The Darlow fans will be clamouring for Tyrone O'Neill to start to merit Borough taking him away. They were furious last week on the Twitter reaction to that news. Vicky, we were talking earlier about Borough's position and you know, kind of this feeling that the performances have been better than what the table show. Is that the feeling above Woodgate? Is that the feeling at the top of the club that there's certainly no reason to panic?
That's certainly the message we're getting. We're getting the don't panic. At the start of this season, Borough factored in the fact that it was a transitional season. There'd be ups and downs, and there was lots of references to when Norwich did this, they bumped along in the bottom third and finished 14th. Not that the suggestion is that that's an automatic position when you go through a major cultural change, but they have factored in that it would not be plain sailing. And for all the furore, you know, we're getting a strong message that the hierarchy are not panicking. One of the things that we were told at the start of the season is that when we have sticky patches, we're going to ignore the noise, and that kind of ties in a little bit with Woody having a pop a few times now at the criticism of social media, the keyboard warriors, and that is seen as being part of the noise, that a lot of the criticism it's kind of endemic and it's habitual and it's knee-jerky, it's Pavlovian, and no one is saying that people can't criticise, especially in the situation the club are in, but there do seem to be people who relish the situation and wait for the chance to put the boot in. It's hard to separate all the different aspects of criticism, and most of it is legitimate, but there is a feeling within the club that a lot of that is generated not necessarily for the right reasons.
And Phil, those comments from Woodgate were there on Saturday, as he said that. It certainly didn't strike me as being a pop at the fans. He's accepted, hasn't he, on several occasions this season. You know, some took his comments on Saturday as being a pop at anyone who dares to criticise. But he's accepted this season, hasn't he, on several occasions. He said to us, I completely understand if you'd hammer me for this or if you'd hammer me for that. In the press conferences I've been in, the games I've been at, he's had nothing but praise for the fans.
No, he's very plain speaking, isn't he, Jonathan? He says it as he maybe comes across more forcefully than he maybe intends it to, but he's a fan himself. I think he understands to an extent and empathises with the supporters. There's a big, big world of difference between the fans who rock up at the Riverside and pay the money and watch the team again, and they've been behind the team more often than not this season. I think the home fans have been very supportive, given they haven't had a lot to be supportive about, and the away supporters have been terrific. He's clearly aiming those who, you know, I think he used the word anonymous or social, you know, the people who don't, you know. He has no problem with somebody writing on a Saturday night that I didn't think that performance was very good. Maybe tactically we were naive. you know, the manager has to rethink things. You know, all the stuff that we'd say in the pub or write in our own articles, he's got no problem with that. He understands that's part and parcel of the game. What he's alluding to is the constant sort of white noise of people who hide behind anonymous social media accounts, who you know, every manager's had it to an extent. Karanka had people that just wouldn't have him. You know, people weren't having Tony Mowbray. Some people weren't having Tony Mowbray. A lot of people weren't having Tony Pulis. You know, this is nothing new. And a lot of it's just about opinion. But I think there's a line in the sand that he thinks sometimes gets crossed, particularly the personal stuff. We all know, you know, we've all read it. We get it ourselves quite often. Some quite vitriolic personal abuse. And I think that's where he would like to see, you know, he's just really saying, look, I know who the real supporters are in his view. I know that things aren't great, and I understand you've got a right to criticise me. I'm not above criticism, but let's keep it where possible constructive and non-personal. And you know, it's I don't think it's what he says will make any difference, because I think there is a percentage of supporters at all clubs that will probably cross the line.
Creating malice.
Well, whatever you want to call
it's very after the game when a manager comes out. It's you often hear and see a different person, a different manager to who you sit down with during the week for the pre-match press conferences, don't you? But with Woodgate, he's very quick out.
Yeah.
After a game. On Saturday, it was slightly different in that they did it by the tunnels and Warburton was out first.
Yeah.
And he was 10 or 12 minutes. He was speaking to the local press, and obviously they wanted to get several lines for the international break. And Woodgate was just kind of lingering in the tunnel. But even then, he'd been quick out because he'd done his BBC Tees interview and then he was waiting. But it often then, the emotions are still, the adrenaline's still flowing. You know what it's like. Sometimes I'll write something immediately after a game. Then the next morning, you look at it and think, you know what, I was off target. We've had a chance to reassess it. And there's no doubt that Woodgate will say things. And then the next morning, he'll think, it's not that I didn't want to say that, but I would have maybe said it slightly differently with an hour or two to reflect. That, again, is just part of experience of being a manager, isn't it?
Yeah, and we've all spoken to players immediately after a match, and you know that they're still wired.
And the opposite of that is players will often say nothing immediately after a match because they're still wired. They don't want to commit and let their emotions
go. We spoke to both Woody and players midweek away from the hubbub of the match, and they are a lot more nuanced, they're a lot more constructive, a lot more considered, and you get far better interviews. Unfortunately, the way the day is structured is that you do have to speak to them straight after the game before they go. And you do get... that's a lot of managers drop themselves into trouble, don't they, by criticising referees. And then they go over and they see it on the highlights and slow motion and think, well, you know, perhaps I'm out of order there. So, yeah, in the heat of battle, things get said that maybe are not the best construction of a sentence.
But isn't it just a case as well, isn't it? I include us in this, though. Sometimes we've all got to stop being a little bit precious as well.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, we all give it out. As journalists, we like to think we know where the line is and that we're constructive, but we do criticise, and players have to take it. We have to take it when we get it back. And I think most fans I know personally have no problem with a manager, you know, being forthright, being fairly outspoken. I think most fans that you can think of much prefer a manager who speaks honestly and, you know, in joined up sentences and is a bit passionate than a manager who sits there and, you know, an example, Claude Puel. I mean, that, you know, it just doesn't engage anybody, does it? That kind of sort of almost monosyllabic mumbling. I mean, what he is, he's a Teesider. He's as long as we've known him, he spoke pretty forthrightly. Occasionally, he might say something that gets him in a little bit of bother, but I think people need to understand that, you know, as you say, he's speaking passionately about something he cares about. He's in his first managerial position. He's getting it from all sides. His team's in the bottom three. He can't sign anybody. He's probably not going to be able to sign too many players in January. It must be a high pressure situation. Yeah. And although he tries not to give off the feeling that he's, you know, he's feeling the pressure, he's only human, he's only 39.
And it's always framed by results as well.
Yeah,
you can come out after a win and say something and people will regard you as Oscar Wilde. If you've lost and you say exactly the same thing, it's an insult, a deep personal insult to the fans.
Often nowadays, you see when a manager, or you'll know someone. So, for example, I've spoken to people who know Gary Monk personally and say, you know, really engaging bloke, good laugh, good company. Whereas, not that I was in the press conferences at the time, but listening to those press conferences, watching him speak, with respect, you wouldn't have got that impression, would you? You see a different bloke to who he is. With Woodgate, you two have obviously interviewed him going way back. Is he still the same? Does he still come across the same way now in his interviews as he did as
absolutely.
A player? Or have you noticed a change?
As a player, when you asked him a question, sometimes he could be quite abrupt. I know what you're asking. I know what I'm to say. And, you know, he understands the game, but he would always answer honestly. And I don't see a lot of difference now in the way he reacts. I mean, a lot of managers over the years put down different layers of protection. Diplomatic protection, tactical protection. They don't want to give anything away to the media. A lot of them don't like talking to the media, full stop. I don't think Woody has a problem at all in talking to us. He's very honest, very open. And we all know that he wears his heart on his sleeve, and sometimes you need to massage what he's saying to take some of the heat out of it, or change tenses and stuff, because he speaks in a normal, passionate way, in the same way that he would address one of his mates in the street.
Do you think that's a Teesside thing? Because you two have said the same with me as interviews you've done with Downing over the years, where you've
I think with Morgan Stewart was the fact that he rarely spoke to anybody, particularly in the early days, outside the local press circle. So he might speak to us quite often. Obviously, we did a lot of stuff with him when he was still breaking through the team.
Best guarded.
So he could say something quite often, something quite strong to us, and we knew that wasn't meant for publication. It was clearly just an off-the-cuff remark. But then he would go and speak to somebody in the Sunday papers, when we still had local Sunday paper journalists up here, and he'd say the same thing, and that would be in a headline, you know, about McLaren this or McLaren that. And I think that's the lesson he learned, was that, you know, the local press tend to know what's on the record, what's off the record. You know, we've got to interview them the following week, so we're not going to stitch anybody up. I think with Jonathan, he's just a very direct person, and I'll go back to the time he was interviewed after the Spurs game here, just not long after he'd left, if you remember, when the Tottenham did. Was it 2008? Early on, Spurs played here at the start of the following season, and
he got 1-2-1.
Yeah, I think he did. Medo scored, didn't he? I think, if you remember. He got a load of stick off the Borough fans, and I was there interviewing afterwards. I said, "You got a fair bit of stick from your own old former supporters there today, John." He just says, "Yeah, well, I'd have booed me as well. You know, I don't blame him. You know, I'm coming back here. I used to play for the team. I'd have been booing as well." And that was over 10 years ago. So he hasn't changed. He's obviously matured, and you can tell that he's matured quite considerably in the years since he was first here, you know, when he was a relatively young man, to a lad now who's, you know, got family, he's married, he's a manager, he's done his badges, he's experienced some more highs and lows as a footballer. But I don't think you'll lose that, and I hope you don't lose that edge to him, because it's refreshing to have people in the game who...
He seems quite committed to being honest and open.
Yeah,
which
he
is
wants,
a good thing.
He wants that to be his philosophy, his policy, really. When, you know, he doesn't want to, you know, we've seen the difference already in the way he speaks to the TVs and the radios, haven't we? Than he does to us, in that he's a little bit more, snappy for want of a better expression, a bit more brusque with some of the radio and TV cameras. He gives shorter answers, and sometimes maybe he's a little bit more combative in the way that he'll deal with the question. With us, he sat down, we sort of, I was going to say eye to eye there, but he's 6 inches taller than me, so. But we sit down, we'll sit like we are now, which is around the table or, you know, across the chairs, and we'll have our dictaphones, and he'll be sat, and we'll converse, won't we? And that's a completely different environment, and he's very comfortable in that environment, and he'll go off at tangents, and he'll talk at length about subjects. So I think we get the best of him. And but obviously, as Vic says, it's all through the prism of a result, and ultimately, you know, he'll be judged on results, whether it's a good talk or not, and that's what ultimately does for all managers.
And back to that before we wrap up, and we'll talk about January more next week and do kind of a transfer based trade. But the spell between now and January, 9 games I think it is, starting with Hull, 7 till Christmas and then 2 before January, it feels like a massively decisive spell, because what happens between now and January could very well determine what happens in January, and then what happens in January could very well determine the rest of the season.
I think the immediate spell is absolutely crucial, because you know the consensus is that they have the shape looks better, the team are playing better. That has to deliver. If it doesn't deliver, then you're forced into more crisis management, and that might mean panic buying in January, which could possibly blow them off course. The next two home games, I think, were really important in setting the mood music amongst the fans. It's all very well saying the team are looking better, they're looking more solid, there's big positives. You've got to deliver it, and you've got to deliver it at home.
Phil?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think we shouldn't hold out too much hope for January, because of past experiences. You know, I'm sure Borough will get a couple of new faces in. They have to get a couple of new faces. And who they are at the moment is difficult to predict. There's so many imponderables where Borough, as Vic says, you know, other teams might blow you out the water. As you've said, there's 27 points up for grabs. You can probably write off the first couple of weeks of January potentially as well. There's more games there, plus the FA Cup. So there could be up to 30, 33 points to play for before Borough get the guys in that they want. You know, it might go to the back end of January. We've seen that happen before, haven't we? I think the crucial thing
that happened last year, didn't it, where it felt as though in January the focus moved away from.
Yeah, the goal was you got Van La Parra in fairly early on.
Safe to say it didn't go
too well.
Well, I don't know, he's in the championship.
Borough kickstarted his career. Yeah.
I think the thing is, as we've seen before, not just January windows, but summer windows as well, Borough haven't always addressed the issues. Now, I know it's asking a lot for a club that's in the bottom half of the table and struggling under a new manager with limited funds to buy two or to sign two players who can really make a material effect on Borough's performance. But really, that's what they need to do. There's no point bringing in another Van La Parra who sits on the bench, another Jack Harrison who just had 6 months off and needed game time.
Needs 2 months to get up to speed.
Exactly, yeah. Needs to be people.
That's very, very difficult to make strategic signings.
Exactly, yeah, it is.
You can fill gaps, and you can plug holes, and you can bring people in and do a job, but it's very, very difficult to buy someone that is strategically going to develop the team over the next.
When was the last time, do you think, Borough do? I mean,
Gaston,
yeah.
Yeah, it was probably the last really effective January signing, who came in and improved the team for that brief period, 6 months, 4 months, whatever it was. So often, you make signings, and as we know, you're signing them quite often because they're not playing somewhere else. You know, that's ultimately what it comes down to, doesn't it? There's few clubs going to allow an effective week in, week out starter to move because for any other reason than a massive financial gain, really. So
we're not in a position to do that.
Well, we could keep talking about that, but as I say, I think it's probably best to do a January specific one, which we'll do next week. Just before we do wrap up, we were talking about Stewie there. A treat this weekend, Phil. You've got his dream Borough 11.
Yeah.
Of who he's played with?
Yes, all people he's played with through his time at Borough.
All fair enough. Any curveballs in there without giving anything away?
He hasn't. Well, the one obvious one is he hasn't picked himself, which I was keen that he did, but he said he couldn't squeeze himself into that starting 11 in a true manner. He took one for the team, so to speak. I mean, personally, if you're doing a Borough 11 of the Downing era, which is 2002 to 2019, isn't it really? But effectively, you're talking in the main the McLaren years, aren't you, and the early Southgate years.
Everyone would have him in.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's one of Borough's, you know, particularly in the position when he was at his peak in that position. I don't think Borough had a better left-sided midfielder in that period. But I won't tell you who he's picked in his stead, But I was interested that he's come up with a diamond midfield.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's come up with a diamond midfield to probably to accommodate, like, all when we're picking our greatest teams, we always have a formation that suddenly works for us, don't we?
Yeah,
6 defenders.
But tell us to me, doesn't it? How do I accommodate Janino? Yeah. The dream Riverside Borough 11.
Yeah, I won't tell you whether he's in the team or not. Because he really didn't. I mean, when you look at it, without going into too much details, obviously Stewie's real impact started around about back end of 2004, wasn't it? Whereas Janino had pretty much left Borough by the start of the following season. So there's very little overlap with Janino. So
he's not in.
Well, you'd have to buy your cassette or whatever. You'd have to click online. Yeah.
Saturday morning, that'll be online. Well, thanks a lot, lads, and thanks a lot for listening.